3, 2, 1, you're on.
Hello, and welcome to HB Critical, a podcast where myself and my friends talk about all things gaming. They let me host today, the fools. I am your host, Brandon, and I am joined just by Christy. Hello, Christy.
Hi, everybody.
So, Christy, it is just us two, and we are going to be talking about just a few gaming news. But before we do that, I wanted to check in with you and see what you've been doing lately that you feel like telling the wonderful podcast peeps.
Just dying at school.
Dying at school. There we go.
I had an in-person class over the weekend, and so I was up in Ann Arbor doing that. And, you know, it was fun making new friends, seeing some of my old friends. So I know that people will give me a lot of heat for this. I did bring my Switch and my Steam Deck with me. Unfortunately, I tried to play my Steam Deck in Final Fantasy 14 up in Ann Arbor, but apparently the Wi-Fi is too weak, so there was no FF14. But I did start on the Final Fantasy Pixel Remaster. I started Final Fantasy 1 and Final Fantasy 3. So stay tuned. We'll see how long it will take me to finish Final Fantasy 1, because apparently I think I might have gotten myself lost.
In 1 or 3?
1.
In 1, okay. I could probably help you with that, because last year I was playing quite a bit of 1 before I dropped it. I do want to get back to it at some point, but I may be able to assist you in 1 if you need. But we can talk about that after the podcast. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess for next trip you'll just probably be just doing the Switch, I suppose.
I know. Have you been playing any games?
I have, in fact. So Jarrell's not here, though. He is here in spirit in more ways than one. I'll just leave it at that. But speaking of spirits, I finished Paranormasite, and I quite love that game, to be perfectly frank. We do a category in our game of the year where the category is specifically called Best Game That We Played This Year That Didn't Come Out This Year. And Paranormasite, it's only January, and I think that's a very strong game that's going to be coming in the running when we come around and do that at the end of 2024, because, oh my god, the game is so solid. It's very much a visual novel, a little bit of horror. Like, there's definitely some horror elements, but I wouldn't say it, like, scared me every single second, if you're worried about that, Chrissy, because I know you're going to be trying it yourself at some point. But it's a game that had puzzles quite unlike anything I've ever seen in any other game, and that's pretty cool. So I finished that, and now I am currently working on Golden Sun. I played that on an episode of Does It Hold Up, and you were there with me when I played that, which was fun. I am still playing through it because I want to see where it goes. I also picked up another Code Recollection. I do want to get back to that at some point, because I played the demo when it came out in December and enjoyed that. So, yeah, cool stuff. But we're going to talk about some not cool stuff now, because it's time to get into the news. So, last week, we were talking about, don't mind me, I'm going to have my phone to just make sure I have all the news articles that we're going to be talking about today. But yeah, there were some more layoffs, unfortunately. I'm going to cover both of them at once, just to kind of like, you know, get it all out there. But first, from Kotaku, they have reported, Riot Games has confirmed it is laying off 530 people, or about 11% of its total workforce. 22 days into 2024, at least 3,800 video game layoffs have been reported. And mind you, that is just from the Riot side of things. But before we continue, I'm also going to read this. Unfortunately, there was a follow-up with Microsoft, which was far more devastating. But let's go ahead and read that. Via Game Informer, Microsoft is reportedly laying off 1,900 employees across its Xbox, Activision Blizzard, and ZeniMax teams. So both of them got hit with some heavy layoffs. Before I go any further, I will go circling back to Riot real quick. They did get a pretty decent severance package. It doesn't obviously excuse the fact that they all got laid off. That's awful, of course. Right. But I think comparatively speaking, Microsoft got way worse, because not only did they lose a lot more people, but I don't think they got nearly as generous a severance package. There is going to be some... I'm going to say one more thing in regards to this, but before I do, Christy, you got any thoughts about this? Because I know we talked quite a bit about layoffs last week, but like... What was that?
Honestly, when I saw the layoff news, I it felt like it was like for in December and the end of the year. You don't really expect to see layoffs so early within the year.
No.
And even then, it's just very sad and disappointing that, you know, for an industry that makes so much money and they do make a lot of profit, just to see them laying off so many people like so quickly, it's disappointing.
It is very disappointing. You know, the game industry, you know, from just an outsider that's not looking too deep into through the window of what's going on behind the scenes, you would assume the game industry is just absolutely flourishing right now because we are getting so... Look how 2023's release was. We got so many high-quality games coming from every which direction, and they just kind of, you know, despite the sales or how we thought the sales were going, how many quality games were coming out there, there is a sense that they can't sustain this at the current trajectory that they're going on if they have to keep laying off people. And that just seems to be the first solution that the CEOs or the board or the shareholders just seem to go to is, you know, if they're not making money or if they're not making enough money. That's the one that really gets me. If they're not just making enough money, they'll lay off people. Like, I think I saw a report somewhere. I'm sorry, I can't confirm the source on this, but I think I saw somewhere that Fortnite, you know, it routinely makes billions of dollars. And I do mean billions of dollars each year. And I think there was a year where they only made one more billion than before. And they said, oh, that's not the increase we're seeing. Lay them off. I'm like, that's awful. Like, that is completely awful. And as we, I don't have too much more. I will say I don't have too much more to add to this. Like, again, it's terrible. We talked about it last week, and it's a big shame that we're still getting so many layoffs in January. Like you said, that doesn't seem very common. I don't know. Maybe in some the CEOs have some twisted logic. They're like, oh, let's not lay them off during Christmas. It'll be much better if we do it in January. No, it doesn't make the sting any worse, less bad. But I will say this. So I'm going to pivot to another. So in previous podcast episodes, I have mentioned when, you know, people have been getting laid off, I would quote Satoru Iwata, or not quote him, but mention the fact that, you know, when Nintendo was doing bad, especially during the Wii U era, he would take a pay cut. So did Shigeru Miyamoto. So did other high-ranking members of Nintendo. But I'm going to read this quote from him. If I can get this ad to, like, oh my god. An ad came on the article right as I was trying to, like, read it. And I'm just like, bro, I'm trying to read this quote. All right.
The ad.
I will... Not interested. Let me read it. There we go. It's gone. All right. Here we go. So this is the quote that Iwata said while he was still alive. If we reduce the number of employees for better short-term financial results, employee morale will decrease. And I sincerely doubt employees who fear that they may be laid off will be able to develop software titles that could impress people around the world. So, and that's from the game developer. The website, by the way, is gamedeveloper.com. Just wanted to quote that out there. But yeah, I read that like beyond, like, yeah, I think that's very important because I often talk about the fact that it seems like immoral that they would, their first option would be to lay off people rather than try to cut off pay themselves. But I think he brings up a very good point too. Like, it's business. Morality just often, unfortunately, does not usually have a place when you're in that high up, unfortunately. But even beyond the moral aspect of this, he makes a very good point because morale is a real thing. Just because it's intangible doesn't mean it's not is any less important. Like, I've seen it like on social media, especially Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it. The fact that, you know, people are losing their jobs, and obviously that's sad enough. But then the people who stay in their jobs, now they'll either have survivor's guilt that they stayed when their colleague is gone, or now they're worried that the next thing that happened, they'll be on the chopping block next and they won't have a job. Like, it's they dodged the guillotine this time, but will they get lucky next time? And now they're not focused so much on their work. They're focused, will I have a job in a week or a month from now? Will I be able to continue to pay rent or whatever, you know? They're doing as the best they can, and it may not have results for them. And that's a distraction. That's a distraction. You don't want the consumers to be distracted, and you don't want the people making the games to be distracted because results and sloppy results all the way around And, you know, the CEOs may, it's becoming, it's getting to the point where even the casual consumer is going to start to notice these things. Like one company lays off their staff, but it's happening so much in January that I think it is going to get to the point where more people are going to notice and start to get concerned. And again, that's a distraction. Before I continue talking, do you have anything to say about this?
No, not really.
Yeah, I really hope that they wise up. Actually, I will have to say one more last thing about this. I saw a video from the channel Good Vibes Gaming a few days ago before we recorded this particular episode. The video topic was, why doesn't Japanese companies experience layoffs en masse? And there's some laws against it. I won't go into the full details, but essentially the long and short of it is, in a Japanese business, it's a lot more difficult to fire someone. And if there's a financial crisis that would necessitate, financial crisis that would lessen the amount of money that's coming in, it is the objective of CEOs to figure out as many different ways as possible to keep the company, to keep the employees, essentially. Like, that has to be their absolute last resort. So even if Iwata and Shigeru Miyamoto, like, you know, didn't want to cut their pay cuts, that may be something that they had just simply had to do because of the way Japanese law works. And I'm not here to say which one is better or worse. I just think that there has to be a better solution for these things, because you can't make games without people. And I really hope that this needs to stop coming up, because it just makes me sad just to hear about all these layoffs, all these people. The Microsoft one is devastating. That's almost 2,000. Like, you just lost 2,000 workers just like in one shot. Just like, ugh. It sucks.
It's very disappointing.
It is very disappointing. And I hope the best for the game industry, because it's not looking the best with all these people that are supposed to be making the games that we so enjoy not having them be there. But what can you do? But speaking of Nintendo and legal stuff, there's this little game that's been stomping the sales charts on Steam and Xbox. It's called Pow World. And
okay.
Yeah, the Pow World. I'm sure anyone listening to this podcast has probably heard of it, but in case you haven't, it's essentially this game made by I believe the developer's called Pocket Pair. I believe that's the name of the developer. Yeah, it's a game, it's a survival-based game. But the designs of the monsters are very reminiscent of Pokemon, scarily so. I'm not going to be making any accusations in this podcast, but there's some designs that look really close to Pokemon. But of course, you can also obtain these creatures in other ways. Like, there's a ball that looks, you know, it's a little like a Pokeball, kind of works like one. But you can also give these monsters guns or weapons. And if you want to catch them, you don't necessarily need to use your own monster. You can also just throw hands with them and just catch them that way. You know, like in Pokemon, you weaken them, but you can literally just throw fisticuffs onto the monsters and catch them. And I saw a clip of that, like, maybe like a few days ago. And there was this like adorable creature that looked a lot like maybe like a fat Starly or something like that. And this guy was just like pummeling it in the face. I'm like, no, the poor creature. And then after pummeling enough, threw the ball and caught it. I'm like, what is this game? That's, I guess, power. Again, it's a survival-based game. There is the aspect of, like, fighting other leaders that have pals that you can battle, you know, much like in Pokemon. Right. But yeah, you are trying to gather resources and pals to, like, you know, survive. It's a very much a survival-based game. But as I said, again, the designs look very, very similar to certain Pokemon. People are like wondering if they just rip models what's up?
I think my logic on that is that if it happens the first time, okay, it's just a coincidence. The second time, I'm just kind of like, after three times, I'm kind of raising my eyebrow and going, I think they might have.
Yeah.
Because like, they all look too similar, if that makes any sense.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, once you run into enough coincidences, it starts becoming a pattern instead of a coincidence. That's just kind of the way things go. Well, as it turns out, Christy, there are a lot of people who think that who are also raising their eyebrows, and they voice their concerns to Pokemon specifically, or rather the Pokemon company. And mm-hmm. as a result of that, eventually, you know, there was notice taken. I am just trying to pull up the exact message now. Here we go. I found it. So this is via Wario64. So, ooh, that is not the right tweet. I'm sorry. But basically what has happened is that now the Pokemon company has given an official statement on the fact that, there may be something to all of this. I'm going to try to actually pull it up here, so, because this is not the tweet I thought it was. Yeah, so people were starting, I will say, while I'm trying to pull up the tweet, some people are going all the way and posting the straight up mods where characters can just straight up be Ash Ketchum, replace the pals with actual Pokemon.
I saw that.
Yeah, there's a lot of those mods coming out. And Nintendo was very quick to hit up with the cease and desist on those. Yeah. Have you seen any of those while I try to pull this up?
I saw the article for one, but it happened during my in-person class, and while I was drowning at work, but I didn't really pay too much attention to it, and I didn't really click on the video.
Yeah, no, I just saw a few clicks here and there. Okay, I can't find it. So basically, I apologize, I'm going to have to paraphrase a little bit. But basically, the Pokemon Company has issued a statement essentially that they are now going to start investigating it to see if there is any copyright infringement upon see if there's anything there, basically. Yeah, it's very rare that you'll see Nintendo or the Pokemon Company take a statement such as this, you know, acknowledging that something might actually be going afoot here. Mm-hmm. I guess we'll see what develops from that, see if they actually do find anything. But that's the statement that they made. I think the last time the Pokemon Company made a statement similar to this was shortly after Scarlet and Violet came out, and, you know, people were complaining about the performance issues, and they issued a statement essentially apologizing for that. I've also heard a report somewhere that they've taken that feedback into consideration, which, I mean, I'll believe when I see it. A lot of people were really, pretty loud about Scarlet and Violet's performance issues, despite the quality of the game itself. So I guess we'll see what becomes of that. But any further thoughts on that before I move along?
No, not really.
Yes, I have thoughts.
Oh, Jarrell!
Sorry!
Christy channeled the spirit of Jarrell. He's a fear from the aether.
Hello.
Yeah, here's my chance. Yes. I'm sorry. I wasn't going to come here, but then I was like, oh, but I have so many things I want to say. and now's the time to say them. Yeah. About Power World. Okay. I don't want to talk about layoffs. You guys did that. That's sad. Yes, about Power World. So, you know, I mentioned last time that I have actually played Power World, and that there was no real proof of, any AI usage, but I never talked about the this subject specifically of, the models. There's been a lot of back and forth of people saying that the models were stolen, but then one Twitter person admitted that they modified the models so that they looked more like Pokemon, like they were stolen from Pokemon, and a lot of people have come on to say that, you know, they have been working on this game for 3-4 years, and these models are supposedly built from the ground up. So it's really hard because nobody really knows one way or another. We cannot definitively say anything about it. And having played the game, a lot of these pals look exactly like Pokemon with different elements, basically, different types. 100%, I can agree with that. However, there is, I think, something to say about what makes Power World so interesting. And, there's going to be... I personally don't think, and maybe Chrissy can weigh in here, but I don't think there's going to be any type of legal battle. I don't think there's anything that Pokemon Company can do to Power World at all, aside from the mod that got taken down that you mentioned. We could take down the mod because it's using our, it's using our property. However, Power World technically is not using any property from Pokemon. And I think the biggest thing that makes me feel like the Pokemon Company can't really do anything about this is the fact that the gameplay is just completely different. Like, you cannot say that this is like a Pokemon clone, because while it does feel like a Pokemon clone a little bit, the gameplay for Pal World is just so different that there's like, it's not Pokemon. And I wanted to jump in because one of the things that I've been hearing talks about is that what the Pokemon company should be worried about more so is the gameplay of Pokemon, right? Like, look how popular Pal World is because of how different it is, yet it still has that catching and monster mechanic, and you take the monsters with you and you battle other monsters, but you're battling with them kind of like Arceus did. And so I just wanted to jump in and ask you guys, what do you think? Do you think that the Pokemon Company should be concerned about the gameplay of Pal World and the current gameplay loop of Pokemon, and how some people are saying that Pokemon isn't doing enough as a company to keep the game innovative anymore?
Well, go ahead, Christy.
Oh, I was going to say, I think for the Pokemon Company and Game Freak, the fact that they're locked into having so many Pokemon releases per year has been hurting them. I know Brandon and I, we've spoken about this, but there was a good chunk of time, like around the Game Boy Advance era, where Pokemon, they would be releasing all these random spinoffs that we enjoyed. I know I personally enjoyed some of the spinoffs, like the Mystery Dungeon ones. Yes, those were long and tedious, but they were kind of a nice mechanic. They were like, it was a shift away from the usual, what was it? What did you say, Jarell? What was the word? Like the game loop.
Ah, yeah.
It was a shift away from the usual Pokemon game loop that they had. And so people, it allowed them to branch off and try different things and also encourage, you know, players. It felt like an entry level to a new thing. Like Pokemon Mystery Dungeon was an entry level to kind of the dungeon crawler, mystery dungeon type game. Whereas I know that for the DS, they released Pokemon Conquest, which I've heard was great and fantastic. And it had, and it was pretty much like a tactical RPG, but with Pokemon instead. So I think that, you know, with Pal World doing so well, I think it might give the Pokemon Company a bit of pause to go back and reevaluate how they view the Pokemon franchise. And maybe, and hopefully, my biggest hope is that maybe it can kind of gear, it might be, I'm just hoping that Pal World might make the Pokemon Company and Game Freak kind of reevaluate their game loop and be like, can we experiment a tiny bit more and see what we can do? I know personally that I enjoyed Legend of Arceus with as much content as it did provide, and having such a different game loop compared to other Pokemon games. It was familiar, yet it was kind of new at the same time. And I was hoping for another Legends type game, but I would like to see for them to kind of evolve that gameplay and game loop into something different. I don't know. I just want the Pokemon Company to kind of branch away from what they usually like to do something different. It's been a while. I mean, sure, we got Detective Pikachu returns, but I mean, it's a visual novel, and I love it to bits and pieces, but, you know, sometimes you just want a Pokemon game that's also not a Pokemon game, but also it feels like a Pokemon game. Does that make sense?
Sometimes you want a Pokemon game that's not actually a Pokemon game, but it feels like a Pokemon game.
Exactly. I'm tired. I don't know what I'm saying sometimes, but it's like the thing. It's like when I'm playing Pokemon Super Mystery Dungeon from time to time on my Nintendo Switch, I know it's a Mystery Dungeon game. Yes, it's Pokemon. Does it feel like Pokemon? I mean, some parts it does, some parts it doesn't. It's just, I just want to be immersed in, like, the world and have a different gameplay loop, but also see, you know, familiar Pokemon buddies. I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just tired, y'all.
No, I mean, I think what you said makes sense. And for my part, I didn't like Arceus because I personally like battling in Pokemon. I know there was no... Was there breeding in Arceus? Yes, right?
I don't
think No, there wasn't. I don't think there was. I think there wasn't breeding, and I don't think there was I think breeding and battling were not in Arceus.
Battling, no, for sure.
And I think the breeding thing, I remember having a conversation with Marissa about it, and I think that's why I'm thinking that they didn't have it. I could be wrong. But I think, like, breeding and battling are, you know, core mechanics to Pokemon. I love that they've been giving us new designs of Pokemon, like regional designs, instead of just new Pokemon. I think that's great. Ever since Alola, I think that's been like brilliant, like reimaginings of your old classics are mm-hmm. great. I personally like to see what gimmick comes out in every Pokemon game, right? Like this one is Terastallization. The last one was Gigantamax, which I loved. I thought Gigantamaxing was super fun. And so I personally like that. I don't think that Pokemon needs to venture into newer territory, because to me it's one of those if it ain't broke situations, and based on sales and people who talk shit and still buy it, I don't think it's technically broke. I feel so
called out sometimes.
No, not at all. But like, I don't think I personally hear people's complaints and I understand them. Like I can get wanting more, but I just enjoy like I enjoy Pokemon for what it is, and I like seeing the evolution of it from... I just turned on my 3DS on Saturday because I was trying to find my old Pokemon, which are not on my game, so I don't know where my Keldeo is that I was talking about last week. It's just missing, and I'm kind of mad. But I just turned that on, and then seeing Alola, and then seeing Paldea, like... Oh my gosh, like the difference of a, like an open world, go where you want, play with friends, like we're evolving, we're getting there. I think we're getting there, and I'm just waiting to see what happens next. And that's all I have to say on that. I turn it back over to our host, Brandon.
Okay, I must send Jarell back into the spirit world. Let me just darken the light soon. Okay. I will now brighten the screen. There we go. All right, so that is the situation of Pokemon in Power World. Let's move on to something else for Nintendo. According to a report by Bloomberg, Nintendo's new console will launch this year with an 8-inch LCD screen, according to Omdia analyst Hiroshi Hayase. So this is a report that I have personally heard before. Well, it's a rumor that I heard before. And this is kind of like the first, like, you know, like actual, like, an analyst, like saying something about to this effect. The actual size of the screen is new to me. Like, it's 8-inch. And for comparison, the Switch OLED screen is about 7 inches or 7.5 inches. I believe the regular Switch is like 6.5, and then the mm-hmm. Switch Lite is about 5.5 inches, if my memory is correct. So this is definitely a lot bigger than those. That part is exciting. The fact that it's an LCD screen is a lot less exciting. Obviously, you know, we all started with the regular Switch when that came out, which was an LCD screen. I used that for the first 4 years of the Switch's life cycle, you know, 2017 to 2021. Then I got the OLED, of course, along with side Metroid Dread. And Christy, you and I have spoken so much about how beautiful that OLED screen is. Obviously, the bulk of that conversation came when it first came out, just how much better all of our games looked in handheld mode now. But every now and then, I'll still message you and be like, God, this game looks so beautiful on the OLED screen. I got fully turned on to OLED screens because of the Switch OLED, to the point that about a year ago, the 4K TV I have in my room, I got an upgrade for it recently. It is now an OLED screen because I just needed it everywhere. I just needed that kind of clarity.
It's great. It's wonderful. I love OLED.
It's so beautiful. And so as happy as I am that the screen for the whatever the next system will be bigger, that's cool. It's going to be rough at the beginning. It's not an OLED screen.
Yeah, why? Why did you do this to me, Nintendo?
I have to
say something.
Oh, I was just
going to return.
I'm probably just going to stick around. I was just going to say this was my, you know, I made the comment on this because this was my biggest complaint when I saw that it was LCD. I was like, how do you go backwards? Like Brandon already mentioned, the OLED is right. 7.5 you said for the current OLED switch?
Either 7 or 7.5 for the OLED.
Save your inch and give me an OLED screen. I understand that it's going to cost more, but how do you revert? Like, that really just pissed me off. Like, I really was just like, how is it that you're going backwards, Nintendo? Please. Like, obviously, I don't know what the, you know, console's going to look like. I don't know what it's going to be. Maybe that's why, but that's just my two cents on it.
It'll have two screens. It'll be like a 3DS.
Okay, but are they both LCD screens?
With 3DS.
Because I don't want two LCD screens. I'm spoiled. Stop taking things away from me.
The OLED is so nice. Why do you do this to us?
Well, I suppose we won't know the full answer to that until we get more details. I'll give a guess. Obviously, I know nothing. My only guess on that is like, well, Jarrell, the spirit of Jarrell, basically said that maybe it's like because of the size, it'd be more expensive. I think that's kind of what it's going to really end up being, the pricing of it. I think the pricing is the reason why they're like going back to LCD, and I don't know. Maybe when I actually play the system, hopefully the graphics of whatever the new system is capable of will distract me from the fact that it's not an OLED screen. And I think inevitably there will be like an OLED model that we're just going to buy because we are suckers.
Yeah, but, they sucker us in. I still have my OG Switch, and so I take my OG Switch to traveling with me, like around locally, because you know I like to have my Switch Lite in bed and play it. And of course, you know my Switch Lite likes to fall on my face. So far, it's been Switch Lite 100, Christy -0, -100 at this point in time, but.
Oh my gosh.
I bring out my regular Switch with me everywhere, you know. I don't need to worry about it too much. And so whenever I bring my Switch out to other places, I'm looking at the screen like, man, this is so tiny compared to my OLED back at home. Like my OLED is so nice and the screen just looks so pretty and the visuals, it just looks visually pretty and just knowing that the Switch 2 is going to return back to the LCD screen, it's just why?
Either of you played Engage on an original Switch?
It doesn't look pretty.
That's what I wanted to know, thank you.
It does not look pretty, sir. Like, dumb. It looks really pretty on the OLED.
Yeah, anything that has come out post 2020, or rather, post Metroid Dread release days, I have not seen on an original Switch at this point. Like I went to my OLED and never went back. So yeah, I imagine a game like Engage that is so colorful would really pop out well on the OLED and probably just not look as good. Ugh, man, this is gonna suck.
Also, anyway. Your phone has an OLED screen.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty soon, Fire Emblem Heroes, they're adding Emblem March. Haha.
That's right. This wasn't on the news report, but sure, we could talk about it real quick. Coming to Fire Emblem Heroes, we are now getting Lumera from Fire Emblem Engage as a mythic hero, as well as a new hero type in Fire Emblem Heroes, Emblem Heroes. So, and the first one is, of course, Emblem Marth. So there you go. If you're still playing Fire Emblem Heroes, I do actually want to ask this question before we move on. Christy, do you think little by little, actually, I guess it's a two-part question. One, little by little, do you think they're going to add all the emblems that were in Engage? And two, do you think that they'll add emblem characters that weren't emblems in Engage?
You know, right now with, mobile games being such a huge moneymaker, I think eventually they will add everybody, like every popular unit will have an emblem counterpart.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's just a matter of who gets added at the beginning and who gets added last.
Yeah, I suppose it makes sense. I haven't done this in a year, but before I transition, I'll just say Emblem Engage.
Please sponsor us, Fire Emblem Heroes.
Yes, please sponsor us. give Chrissy good units so she can review them, and we'll talk about every podcast.
Give me great units. Although, no. I did pull what's her face? I did pull Altina recently, the new one.
Oh, the new Altina. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Chrissy and I also had a discussion about the fact that Altina has so many alts, yet I think she appears like in like one scene in like Path of Radiance or Radiant Dawn.
She's mentioned quite frequently in Radiant Dawn, but let me see. Now I'm curious. I can't remember if she appears or not. I have to look it up.
For those who don't know who Altina is, while she's looking it up, she is essentially a warrior that, in the distant past of Teleus, wielded both Ragnell, the sword that Ike uses, as well as what's the name of the Black Knight sword? Alondyte. She mm-hmm. wielded both Ragnell and Alondyte, which was used by the Black Knight. And was a pretty cool hero. But I haven't played the Teleus games. So, that you know, hey, Nintendo, if you ever want to release some Fire Emblem games, those Teleus games would sure be great because they're prohibitively expensive right now for anyone that just wants to play them. You know, GameCube games have gotten pretty expensive, especially the ones that didn't sell great. And Radiant Dawn is also not that it's not easy to get into that one as well. Well, anyway, while Chrissy is getting...
She appeared briefly in a cutscene.
Okay, she did appear. Okay. So they did not conjure her image from nothing. That's good. You know what's not good, though? Is the fact that Suicide Squad came out in Early Access. Or Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. And for those who bought it on Steam, if they bought the game and loaded it up, it would auto-complete. So the minute you loaded up Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League Early Access, the game would be completed. What's your thoughts on this?
Just wow, that was really quick.
Yeah,
they're not inspiring lots of hope that this game will have a great launch. I mean, I might be wrong, and it might just be a wonderful game that was like a sleeper hit, and all of this was done for noise marketing. But at the same time, they're making me worried about this game. Like, it's supposed to be launching at the end of this week.
Yes, it is. I've been worried about this game for a long time. Oh, the Spirit of Jarrell wishes to speak. Speak to us, Spirit.
Oh, I just muted my mic because I was coughing, and I just unmuted it. But since you summoned me, what was I going to say about this game? I saw some discourse, and you know, one of the tweets I saw earlier today said basically that if they had given out review codes earlier to outlets, they could have told them that this was happening and it could have been prevented. But also I saw that like do you get access, early access from pre-ordering?
To my knowledge, yes, but I don't know the full details on that.
So I saw another tweet that was just like, this is unacceptable because people are paying to play early and they're not getting the ability to play at all. And I agree with that.
Yeah, no, it's something that shouldn't have been out by the time Early Access came out, but it definitely better be ironed out by the time that full game comes out for everyone this Friday as of this recording. Because, oh boy! Ah, yeah. I wish this game the best, because from reports that I'm hearing, the story apparently is really, really good, which that's not surprising, because Rocksteady has been very good with their games with the DC Plus, with the Batman series, for example. Like, their plots have always been really good, and the gameplay, too. But I feel like Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League is suffering from... trying to follow an industry trend rather than actually trying to be like a really good product, because I don't think the idea of having, you know, a game about the Suicide Squad and having them team up and have you team up with your friends to go fight the Justice League, I don't think that's a bad idea at all. I just think it's leaning a little too heavily into the live service genre that has gone to so many games and has often not times not paid off for them because there's such stiff competition in that market. And not to mention, I don't know if I think I feel like based on the gameplay that I have seen, obviously I have not touched this game, but based on the gameplay I have seen, it really does feel like the game is trying its best to be accessible in a way that no matter what character you're using, you can still play in a similar way, as opposed to really utilizing the unique talents of each member of the Suicide Squad that is being presented to you. And that, I think, is unfortunate. Like, I think I saw somewhere that Captain Boomerang is not even using his boomerang. I'm like, what the hell? It's just like...
That's so weird.
Like, Harley's using her bat, to my knowledge, and I think King Shark is using some of his strength, but they all got, like, guns, which, to my knowledge, which, as far as I'm concerned, the only one that should be using guns is, like, maybe Harley Quinn and, obviously, Deadshot, but, like, beyond that, I'm just, like...
I feel like this is one of those games that I could be completely wrong about this, but I feel like this is one of those games that, like, could have been good... I liken it to Forspoken, right? Like, I think that it's one of these games that I think is going to be good or can be good and fun, but it's gotten so much bad press already that there's no way to make it okay to play, if that makes sense. Like, it seems like one of those games that, like you mentioned, Brandon, is going to have a good story. It could be a lot of fun just as a game to play with your friends, which... it's intended to be, right? It's just a loot shooter. I love loot shooters. I will play Borderlands and, like, laugh and have a good time with my friends. Loot shooters are just fun, and I feel like a loot shooter with a good story based on DC characters is a win situation, and they're giving us a lot of stuff in the beginning, right? Of course, the live service model does suck, but and I'm not defending that at all. I just think the industry is trending towards live service because things are becoming more expensive and less sustainable. But I mean, that's also a conversation about how these companies are run and how they're laying people off, and a bigger conversation that obviously this game is not talking about. But I do wonder if this game is going to be like a Forspoken, right? Like one of those games that if we all, like the three of us and Gabe got on together, chose a superhero or super villain, killed some superheroes and played through the story, I think we would have a great time, right? Like, I think it's going to be one of those games, but I think because it's gotten so much admittedly fair bad press, I'm not saying that the bad press isn't fair, but I think because it's gotten so much bad press, it's just one of those game things where, like, the bads just keep coming, right? There's no redemption for it. Like, we're now seeing the redemption for Forspoken a year later. People are like, oh my god, it's actually a good game. Like, it's actually not trash. I was told it was one thing and I'm playing it myself and it's something else. I feel like this game could be that. But at the same time, like, if it's not working at pre-launch, like, what are you doing? So, I say all that to just say it doesn't matter because your game isn't even working. It's bugged out, so... And you know, not giving review codes to reviewers is usually not a good sign. So,
That's the other worrying thing too. But we won't have to wait much longer to just see how it unfolds when it actually comes out. But even if it ends up good, Persona 3 Reload comes out that day as well, and so
wow. Wow, man, they said it doesn't matter because you're just gonna go play Persona 3 Reload. Like, it doesn't matter, just play Reload.
It doesn't matter. It's fine.
That's gonna be a good game. There's no doubt about that one, at least. So, you know, I'm just saying, you can injure. You know, I'm gonna stop this now. Let's move on to the next topic, which is completely unrelated. But we have a new president of Blizzard Entertainment. Her name is Johanna Faries, I believe that is how her last name is pronounced. She is the new president of Blizzard Entertainment. Cool, but does anybody know anything about this particular person?
Yes.
I think...
Go ahead, Christy.
I was about to say, I think Jarrell knows more about it than I do.
Then speak to Spirit of Jarrell.
I don't know if I know more than you do. I just know that she was...
You absolutely do.
She was the first Black woman to have that position. And she is now the first Black woman to have this current position. She was under Microsoft. She was on the Call of Duty side of things. And she... Oh, God. Yeah, hold on. one second, because I had a thing about this. But she, I don't remember what position she actually had as over Call of Duty, actually. So I don't know more than you. But
that's more than me, unfortunately.
Oh, so one of the things about this, though, was that she is from Call of Duty, and for a very long time, Blizzard and Activision have tried to be separate. Like, before, I don't know if you guys remember, I'm sure you remember, but before Activision Blizzard merged, it was Activision, and then it was Blizzard. Like, this yes. merger is, I don't know how many years old at this point, but one of the things Blizzard was afraid of during the merger was losing autonomy over, you know, their company. And so now that the all the heads basically of Blizzard are gone, including Mike Ybarra, who I believe was the president of Blizzard. I could be wrong. I think it was him. He's gone. So they needed a new president. And what they did was they basically just took this woman from Call of Duty and made her the president of Blizzard. However, Blizzard has been trying to get away from Activision interference for a long time. And they basically just took a woman who is in charge of Activision and put her in charge of Blizzard. The thing that they necessarily haven't wanted for this long. However, a lot of their higher ups are gone now, so there's not much you can do. I think it's just so interesting to see that this purchase from Microsoft has, and we haven't discussed it yet, but this purchase from Microsoft has not only taken jobs away from Activision Blizzard employees, but it's also started to do things like merge parts of the company that weren't merged before. But I mean, that's kind of what you have to do when you inherit a ton of new employees after a huge purchase, and then you have too many people with the same jobs at the same level that can't all do it, because like, why would I have 5 Christies and I already have 1? And now that I have 5 Christies, I have to lay off 4 of them. And, you know, I'm leaving now, so I need to replace myself. I'm going to put one of those other Christies in charge. So now, like, there's a Christie that shouldn't be here. This is a weird analogy, and I'm going to stop now. But you get what I'm saying.
Yes, it was a weird analogy.
But yeah, Activision Blizzard has had issues with them interfering. But you know, I don't know. She could make things better for all I know. You know, they've had an issue with sexism and racism and all this other stuff, but a lot of those people are gone now or leaving, and you know, Microsoft has new leadership, so we'll see. Jason Schreier had a tweet where he said, in an email to staff today, Faeries appeared to acknowledge the awkwardness of her obviously coming over to the president of Blizzard now, in which she said, quote, Activision Blizzard and King are decidedly different companies with distinct games, cultures, and communities, and that I'm walking into this role with sensitivity to those dynamics. And I think that's also a really big point of this, is that Call of Duty and King, which does, you know, the what's that, the mobile game?
Candy Crush.
Yeah, like Call of Duty and Candy Crush are very different from the ecosystem of what of like World of Warcraft and Overwatch. Like, those are all like the two Blizzard games are on the opposite spectrum of Candy Crush and Call of Duty. Like, they couldn't be, like, you have a huge MMORPG, you've got a team-based shooter, you've got dude bro Call of Duty that makes a shit ton of money every year, that's, you know, I'm not gonna say recycled because people are gonna get mad at me, and then you have, like, moms playing Candy Crush, you know, making it a huge, like, they're just so different, so I just am interested to see how she transitions and what happens to the company with this new way of running things.
Yeah, I wish her the absolute best, and hopefully everything goes well with Blizzard under her leadership. That's all we can really hope for, I suppose, right? Well, I don't have much more left to speak upon. I think we will just do one more topic here. So as of this podcast recording, there is going to be a State of Play on Wednesday, January 31st. Now, if you are listening to this after the State of Play has already aired, you can basically tell us if we're wrong about anything. But basically, as far as we know, it's going to be 40 minutes long, and it's covering 15 plus games, including extended looks at Stellar Blade and Rise of the Ronin, plus more from talented game developers from around the world. That is directly from PlayStation's social media. So obviously we're going to see those two games, Rise of the Ronin, Stellar Blade. Both look like they could be very entertaining games. So yeah, I'm interested in seeing a little bit more of those. I don't know if I want to do like a full on, what are you going to see in the State of Play thing? You know what? So Christy, just tell me maybe one or two things that you think might pop up in addition to those two games.
I feel like with the State of Play, do we mention Rebirth yet or no?
No, we have not. And if that's going to be your prediction, I concur with that, because I think there's a very good chance we might see something from Rebirth in this State of Play. Maybe not a lot, but
I honestly, I would be surprised if we didn't see anything from Rebirth, just because it's coming at the end. Actually, it's coming out within 30 days from today.
Yeah, 30 days from today, and that'll be 28 by the time that airs. So yeah. That's a solid one. I hear people, I see people on my feed getting their clown makeup on, hoping for Kingdom Hearts 4 news. You're not going to get Kingdom Hearts 4 news.
Missing Link. That's going to be the sleeper hit. Missing Link. We'll see Missing Link for PlayStation.
Missing Link on PlayStation? That would be insane if that happened, but I don't
and think. And now it's time for me to get my clown makeup ready.
Okay. Yeah, no, I would love it, obviously, but I don't think we're seeing anything Kingdom Hearts in this State of Play. I do think we're going to see some Rebirth. We did recently get the DLC for Final Fantasy 16 with Echoes of the Fallen. It's possible we might see the Leviathan DLC gameplay here. That is a hard maybe, though, because we did just get that last DLC, and maybe the second one's not ready yet. Or maybe it is. Maybe it's released closer than we think, and they'll have something for that. I don't know. I suppose we'll see. Beyond that, I really don't know what else to predict. I feel like
I was gonna say, I am actually curious to see an extended look on Stellar Blade.
Thank you. That's what I've been waiting for, Stellar Blade.
I'm waiting for that, and I'm curious. Also, I want to try Foam Stars so bad.
That's what I was gonna say. I think, you know, we're gonna get a look at Foam Stars, and I'm just waiting for Stellar Blade.
Yeah, for sure.
Didn't they confirm that we're going to get a look at Stellar Blade, an extended look?
Yes, that's what I was saying. Yeah. We're getting a look at Stellar Blade. Rise
my bad. Ronin. Stellar Blade, not Stellar Blade. Stellar Blade. Yeah. I think on the tweet it says we're also going to have extended looks at Stellar Blade and Rise of the Ronin. Yes. So I'm excited to see more about it. That's the one that looked very interesting the first time I saw it compared to Foam Stars, although I've been hearing rave news about Foam Stars and how it's much more enjoyable than what it looks like. So,
well, Christy, you know. I have great news for you in case you didn't already know. Foam Stars is going to come free with your PS Plus Essential as one of the three games coming up. So you will get the chance to try the game for yourself as part of your existing PS Plus membership. So we will all know very soon if Foam Stars is actually as good as people are raving about. Or if it isn't, I guess we'll find out. Yeah, we should definitely give that game a try soon when it comes out. But yeah, we might get. That's a good mention. Foam Stars may get one more gameplay spot since it is going to be coming out in just a few days, like under a week, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe a week. We'll see. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to Stellar Blade. I remember I saw a tweet about like a week ago from Yoko Taro. Talking about how excited he is for Stellar Blade. And he showed off a picture just like of the main character from behind and showing off her, her behind. And people are like, Yoko Taro is just always horny on main. It's just like, unfailing. So this is the man that created 2B. Of course he's going to be horny on main for the main character Stellar Blade, because goddamn. Anyway.
Wait, what is he not? Like, can someone tell me when he's not horny on main? Like, yeah. Honestly, he's always.
My still one of my favorite tweets of all time from Yoko Taro is someone tweeted him saying that, I think he met his girlfriend because she was a 2B cosplayer. And then he was like, oh no, I don't like this kind of report. I wish all men would go away from the world. I wish this meant ill anytime. Because he wants all the pretty women for himself. I'm just like, oh man, this guy. Oh, by the way, I have to mention this real quick. Chrissy, did you see that Nier Reincarnation, the mobile game, is ending service?
I saw. Oh my God. I started playing it at the beginning and then I dropped off. And then now I'm like, I need to go back and play it. But also, at the same time, I was like, do I really want to do all of that?
Brandon, yeah, are like, you about to talk about the Persona thing?
No, I am not. No.
Okay.
I'm not. No, no, that is no. I will not mention that. That is a meme that I have seen. It's a funny meme, but no, I will not mention.
But is it a meme if it's true?
It's kind of true. Okay, now I have to mention because people are going to be confused. What the Spirit of Jarrell is referencing is the fact that they'll do a mobile game, an ongoing mobile game, will get a crossover. Persona characters will appear in said mobile game. And then a year later, the service ends. It happened to the Sword Art Online game. It happened to Dragalia Lost. Dragalia Lost got a Persona crossover. It did. Yeah, Dragalia Lost got a few good crossovers. It had a Fire Emblem Heroes crossover. It had a Mega Man crossover and a Persona crossover. Persona was the last major crossover I want to say they did before a service ended a year later. Yeah. I remember a YouTuber was like really happy about the Mega Man one in particular because he loves Mega Man. So it was like you had like a shooter character in Dragon Ball. Anyway, yeah, so it happens often. But anyway, getting back to what I was actually going to say is, yeah, Nier Reincarnation is ending service. Like the last story chapter, I think, is coming out in March, and then it's actually ending a service a month later in April. There's going to be another Nier concert. And I think, I don't remember the exact number of the concert, but it's referencing the end of service date of Nier Reincarnation. And people are just like, Yoko Taro, you mad man! Like, and I think that like concert date was announced before the end of service date. And then people realized, oh God, it's the same number. Like, what is this? I just hope that there'll be an easy way. Maybe YouTube will be that way, but I hope there's a way that story is just easy enough to access if it's that important to the overall Nier canon. I know with Kingdom Hearts, Union Cross, that game ended service a while ago. But if you still have the app today, you could like watch all the cutscenes, so you could still get that story if you wanted to. Probably be easier to just do it YouTube, but it's there on your phone if you really wanted to do it that way. So that's an option. And then Dark Road is offline, so there's that. Yeah, no, like, it's just always sad when games, like, end of service, because then you just can't play them. I'm still upset that Dr. Mario World had service ended. That was actually a very fun game, but you just cannot play it anymore. But I suppose that's just the way mobile games are. Anyway, we got a bit off topic, but State of Play, any last predictions before we close this bad boy out?
Not for me.
Stellar Blade.
Did you talk about the Microsoft layoffs though? I had something to say about that if I missed it.
We didn't channel your spirit yet. If you'd like to speak, your spirit's here now, so you may speak on it.
Yes, I did want to talk about that specifically. Only about how I think that those layoffs are different from all the other layoffs we've been seeing in the industry. And it's specifically because, going back to my Christie analogy, it's specifically the fact that Microsoft purchased Activision Blizzard, but they bought the studio knowing that they already have a bunch of people doing the same thing, and therefore they had to let go of a lot of people because you can't have a bunch of people on staff doing the same exact job. I wanted to just mention how I think that those layoffs are a bit different, and pose a question to you guys as to like how you thought that, like, did you assume that something like this would happen, and how you think they could have handled it? Because if that's the case, they kind of already knew what they were getting into with this, which is, we know that we're when we do this merge, we're going to have like X amount of people all doing the same job. But what happens, you know, with Microsoft, if they continue to purchase companies like this and they don't have space for the people that work at these companies that they're purchasing? And not only that, but, you know, we can also talk about the tweet from Timur Hussein, who mentioned that they spend billions on acquiring Activision Blizzard King, give Kotick millions on his way out, made billions in Q4 of 2023 alone, and then they fire a bunch of people, and this is what corporate consolidation does, because this is what corporate consolidation is all about, absolute disgrace, which I completely agree with, but I still think this isn't, you know, this isn't we're firing a bunch of people to keep money at the top, and I think that's very important to note the difference of, right? Like, it's not just the same layoffs as something at Riot Games. This is more of a, we actually do need to downsize because we have too many people, not, hey, we hired a bunch of people and now we're going to get rid of them so that the CEO at the top can get paid more money. And I just wanted to mention that was a difference there, and I think that could be a really good conversation, but maybe for a shorthand or another time.
For sure. Yeah, no, it is definitely a different situation. To answer your question, though, I can't say that the inevitability about losing employees was something that was at the forefront of my mind when I was kept hearing updates about this. But of course, in retrospect, that just tends to happen when you have a merger, especially a merger as big as this one, because redundancy is just something that happens. Like, if you have two companies that have these X amount of people doing these amount of tasks and they merge, well, you're going to have people that are doing the same job and they just won't, you know, they just don't want that.
So. Yeah, it wasn't at the forefront of my mind either. You know, in my mind, I'm thinking, all right, this merger is going to happen. Clearly, they have Activision Blizzard. Like, they know what they're getting into. They're prepared for onboarding all these people. That was my thought. And then it's like, okay, well, I guess it does make sense that, you know, afterwards, my thought is, okay, it does make sense that, you know, with a merger this size, of course people are going to lose their jobs, right? Like, afterwards, just because of what you said, redundancy. But, like, I just assumed that if you're getting all these, you know, these studios, you have space for all these people. But yeah, apparently not.
Yeah, no. That unfortunately didn't seem to be across many of the higher ups' minds. They just wanted that merger to go through at the expense of the people, and it's just sad. Any last thoughts on that, Chrissy, before we close this out?
No, just that it's sad. And honestly, I think it wasn't in the forefront of a lot of people's mind. And I think, especially with the ones who championed the merger, saying that this was the best way to get rid of Kotick. I think hearing the news of the layoffs, I think if they finally realized that, well, it was that it's happening, and that, you know, a lot of positions that are like redundant, they are now gone. They're consolidated. So it's just a sad situation all around.
And can I read a quote from Blizzard?
For sure.
Mm-hmm. On their new president.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Because I'm learning as well. She said in her letter on Blizzard site, she addressed it as Dear Blizzard. Her official first day is February 5th. She said, quote, Activision Blizzard and King are decidedly different companies with distinct games, cultures, and communities. It is important to note that Call of Duty's way of waking up in the morning to deliver for players can often differ from the stunning games in Blizzard's realm, each with different gameplay experiences, communities that surround them, and requisite models of success. I've discussed this with the Blizzard leadership team, and I'm walking into this role with sensitivity to those dynamics and deep respect for Blizzard as we begin to explore taking our universes to even higher heights. I'm committed to doing everything I can to help Blizzard thrive with care and consideration for you and for our games, each unique and special in their own right. I'm optimistic about our ability to serve our current and future player communities and to further amplify the shared passion for greatness, polish, and creative mastery that is a hallmark of Blizzard's approach to game making. And then she goes on to say that next week she's going to be in Irvine and she's going to be connecting with as many people as possible. And how her job is, like, you know, it's very important to her. She's inspired by Blizzard and their legacy and blah, blah, blah. And I just wanted to add that I think that this could be a good thing. Before reading that, I was like, I don't know how the Blizzard employees would feel because they've been trying so hard to keep things separated. But someone coming in that clearly is, you know, very aware of how different these games are, which is what I mentioned earlier. But also, having a woman president after all the sexism that was rampant in Blizzard could also help too. So I think this could actually be, you know, not only a woman, like a POC woman as well. So I think this could be very good for Blizzard. That's my final opinion, because before I feel like I was middling a little bit. But after reading her statement, I feel more comfortable of saying I think this actually might be a good thing for them.
I think it's good. I think it's really good that she acknowledges the type of situation that she's in, like the atmosphere, or I guess environment, and that she understands the sensitivity that other employees have, especially with the fact that, you know, Blizzard has been trying to you know, prevent Activision from, like, interfering with their work. So she's aware of that, and I think she's doing the right things, and I really do hope that it becomes a really good partnership, and that, you know, I think with the statement that she issued out, I think things are on the right way. I think things are going on the right track for Blizzard. So I'm hoping for the best, and I'm curious to see what happens next. Really hoping that, you know, after all the things that has happened to Blizzard, it does turn around with her as their president.
Yeah, it sucks because it starts with layoffs.
I know.
It's like starting with a bunch of people laid off, and, you know, Brandon did mention morale of people who are left there.
Yeah.
You know.
And then you get a brand new president. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, with any luck, it can only go up from here, but I guess we'll see. I really hope it's just nowhere but up now, because, oh boy, they're starting off with a pretty low point. But we shall see where Blizzard goes from here. And with that, I believe we've said everything we wanted to in this particular episode of the podcast. Thank you, Christy. Thank you, O Spirit of Jarell. Thank you for thank you for allowing us to channel you into this episode. And I have been your host, Brandon. And we will see you all in the next episode, exciting episode of the HB Critical podcast. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.